Summer, 1971. I was a ritual-loving teenager then, living with my boyfriend in one of the makeshift huts on Bill's land, deep in a shady little valley in Napa, California. Every day, I'd hike up out of the valley, up to the mountain, up to the most majestic oak tree, and there I'd sit under the twisted branches, throwing my voice around, setting off a cascade of ricocheting echoes in the valley. One afternoon, there was a party on Bill's land. Everyone came out of their huts for the occasion, and there was a feast for the eyes, and treats for the taste buds, and for dessert, psilocybin mushrooms. So many people, too many people, so many people, too many people, I want to be alone. Gotta go, gotta go, gotta go, gotta sing on the mountain under my tree. On my way, a couple seated on a bench near a rickety bridge that covered a bubbling brook. She's very pregnant. He's holding his guitar, but not playing. Bickering, they'd been bickering. I didn't want to interrupt. I just smiled a sheepish grin and then stepped down to the bridge, looking down, careful, careful to keep my balance. But when I looked up, I couldn't believe my eyes. There were dark chocolate Africans dancing on the other side of the bridge, shimmying, undulating. They have pink feather boas on their heads and strands of emeralds strung around their waists and on their arms. Emeralds clanging aperiodically, whipping up a symphony. Further, gray screen under my feet. Foot, touch down, red, fast object, scoots past, wish. But gracefully, up, up, long golden reeds that fling about, tickling me, they are tickling me, and I am totally tickled into hidiness. Heidi is me, and I am she. I can see a giant candelabra all lit up.
It's my dream.
Check it out! He and me and the tree. Equidistant, we are forming an equilateral triangle. The long and golden reeds are clapping now, applauding. Peacock feathers are springing up, thousands of them with cerulean blue eyes. Witnesses as Peter and me arrive at my tree at the exact same moment, and instantaneously, without saying a word, we're gonna start playing a song that we have never, ever heard before.
Hi there, folks. Simo, would you like to come over here and say hi to everyone?
Hi.
After many, many, many years and many permutations of the music that we've been making with each other,
sometimes just in duo, sometimes more improvised with stories. This is our CD release concert. And as you see, there's lots of voices on there and lots of things. And for this particular performance, we have the amazing Jason Wang, Marika Hughes, Nicole Federici, Jessica Pavone, Daphna Naftali, my heart, Dave Hofstra, who's actually played bass in that last track, and Danny Tunick. Yay, Danny. Simo, you don't want to say anything at all? Okay. We have no program for you, so if you have any questions, I also want to... I'll tell you anything you'd like to know. Should I have seen you? Never should you have looked at me so. And never should I have whispered in your ear. Never should you have called me. Never should I have heard your voice. And never should you have come so very close. Never, 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 never.
Love you back, and never should we have
walked the line. Never should we have waited. Never should we have said all those nevers and never. No, never, never again. Very unconventional way of working, and actually back in the year 2000 we composed this piece for voice and piano and faux French, but I really wanted to tell this story and it seemed appropriate to do it with this music, and the first time ever with this marvelous group of musicians. Okay. I'm thinking about Maxime Cardon. She was French from Paris, but I met her in Amsterdam. We were both models at the Academy of Art. She was nude the first time I saw her. She had a face like a Madonna. Her eyebrows were plumpets. She had brown bedroom eyes and silky maroon-headed hair with short bangs. Her front teeth were large, but she mostly kept her full lips closed. She was tall, her neck was large, but she, her shoulders were delicate, mom. Her long arms moved so gracefully. Her breasts hung low, but the nipples pointed upward. She was short-waisted with wide hips. Her slender legs seemed to start way high up. Somehow, she reminded me of a horse. Yes, in French, the word for horse is cheval. Cheval, much more romantic than a horse. I was 20, she was 23, and she used to ride me on the back of her bike.
Thank heaven.
We'd stop at the outdoor markets at closing time, and we'd pick out fruit and vegetables from the reject pile. And she said, on my good day, I even find steak on the street. We found an abandoned factory to squat. It was filled with mildewed furniture and used syringes and other unmentionable things. And it took us a long time to clear it out, but somehow the movements we made as we cleaned it up was like some kind of new choreography. And it was magnifique in the end. There were skylights and we set up our bedrooms in two alcoves, and we took our meals on a platform covered with a burgundy rug. We sat in two stuffed armchairs as though we were in a Vermeer painting, and we found everything on the street. We had no electricity, but we made even the most simple meal beautiful. Deviled eggs, raw haring, fresh figs, and sometimes her parents sent us fine champagne. Our makeshift dining platform was set over a trap door to prevent our downstairs neighbors from climbing into our place again. Ten guys with long, scraggly black hair lived down there. They were from Italy. It was very dark. And they liked to sew while snorting white stuff in the glow of black light. One day, Maxime and I saw two of them panhandling on the Dom Square. They were wearing bell bottoms that they made from our missing brocade bedspreads, pom-poms and all.
They were really quite domestic. And they sang O Solo Mio while they cooked pasta.
In big garbage cans in front of the house. I'm not kidding.
On the Dama Square, and I always like to have a kind of at least two reasons to go somewhere. And in 1972, Documenta was happening in Castle, and I really wanted to go there to see modern art and Heinz. Hitchhiking. I got picked up by these two men in a dark blue Mercedes Benz. I was hitchhiking on the highway. It was pouring rain, and I mean there was something bad that happened to me when I was hitchhiking in San Francisco the year before, but it wasn't gonna happen to me this time. This was Holland, you know, Donkey Bell and all that. Anyway, I got in, and pretty soon I realized that the men weren't Dutch after all. They were German. They were elegant. Their dark blue suits matched the car, and they had these accents. One of them was bald, and he was at least 70 years old, and the other was at least 50. You know where they must have been in World War II? I'm Jewish, but not really. No one ever talked about that kind of thing in my neighborhood. Not even the couple who had these numbers on their arms. They owned the corner grocery store. Anyway, I told the men that my name was Shelley Hirsch. They must have known it was a Jewish name. I showed them the little paper that Heinz's address was written on. I met him on the Dome Square. He looked like the other strong, quiet types I was attracted to, except he had blonde hair. I was so nervous. Suddenly, we're going off the highway, and we stopped at the address I had given them. They must have known. I mean, it was. The younger man got out of the car and rang a bell.
Where was Heinz?
The man got back in the car and said they were gonna take care of me. And then we drove and drove to a forest. Now I love nature, but it was after the rain and everything was dripping. It reminded me of those Grimm's fairy tales. I love them, but they were brutal. We kept driving through droplets of rain, and then they pulled up to a house. It looked like a gingerbread house. They let me out so gracefully. The older man had a cane. A woman came to the door, and she had on a dirndl dress and clouds and hairy legs like I did when I worked in the donut shop in San Francisco. They told me to come sit down at a wooden table, and there was a fireplace. They ordered potato soup for me. I loved it. There were little frankfurters floating in it. And after I ate, they said they couldn't just leave me there. They would take me back to Heinz's house. How could they be so nice?
still wasn't home, so they rang the bell of a neighbor and asked if I could wait there until Heinz came home.
He came down.
Ooh. Yogis I'd seen.
His foot had high ceilings. Everything was placed with such care.
We were drinking tea from porcelain bowls. Then
I turned to see
these women, 10 of them on the marble mantel place. They were all made of plaster, and none of them had any heads.
I knew he was gay.
But I thought gay men liked women. Anyway, it felt
so romantic.
You know, the fear factor had already dissipated, and then, just as the record had ended, it was pictures and exhibition. I heard some sound. It was Heinz walking up the stairs, very slowly. I grabbed my knapsack and walked to the door. I stopped to put on my shoes. They hadn't yet dried from that walk in the rain. I opened the door. There was Heinz. He looked different than when I met him on the Dam Square in Amsterdam. He was very pale.
He didn't seem so happy to see me, but I followed him up the stairs.
He opened the door. There were graying sheets hung sloppily across the windows. A small wooden table filled with cigarette butts and packs of cigarettes. I didn't really know what to do.
Heinz just walked into the other room and sat down
on a ratty stuffed chair. He was clearly very ill. I asked if there was anything I could do to help. He didn't speak much English. I told him
I would take care of him,
but he just got into bed. I don't know where I slept that night. I guess I slept with him. But I do know that the next day I headed out to Documenta to see some modern art alone. It was so weird. I didn't want to see all of those American advertisements for Marlboro cigarettes and beer. I don't know, maybe they were some Andy Warhol prints I was looking at. But I left Documenta after an hour, and I stopped for a while to watch some ducks waddling up the canal. And then I went back to Heinz's apartment. There was a putrid smell in the flat, and Heinz looked even worse than when I had left. I don't know how I knew, but he was going cold turkey. I decided that I would just stay there and take care of him. I was there for what seemed like days. The TV was always on, and his eyes were mostly closed. The Olympics were on TV. It was taking place in Munich that year. Munich was only a few hours from where we were. There was a little stool beside the bed. I think I had just gone to sit on it when I heard the shots and saw the Israeli athletes being killed on TV. September 5th, 1972. I don't know when I left and hitchhiked back to Amsterdam. I imagine that I waited till Heinz
was okay. Now we're going to play another track from the CD. Baba Blatchy, this one we actually improvised together in my place and put it out kind of almost exactly like we improvised it, right? A little mixing. Okay, Baba Blatchy. Was Michael Sikorsky on the drums, which were added afterwards. Yeah, someday we will do it with all the voices and all the instruments.
Anybody want to say something?
What? About Julius? Yes. What would we like to say? It was originally this piece, well, I first heard Simo, you played it for me, right, in Brussels, and then I came up with this letter that someone sent to me, and the original words were, "I kiss your toes in disagreement. I argue vociferously for your beauty," but now it's about something else, so. For your brilliance. Oh, yeah, he didn't say beauty, excuse me. Okay.
They tied him up,
Julius, 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 Julius.
His body left in the cold,
Julius, Julius, Julius.
He didn't sit still.
that drove them crazy. When he saw me, he wanted so just to follow me down to where we'd been before we were found out. But they wouldn't let him go, and so whenever I could, I would untie him at night in the light of the silvery moon. He'd bounce along and sing with me, then we'd run off and wind up, he would, in some dirty mess. But he always came right back and stayed at my side. That's loyalty, no need for words. We shared quality time. I loved him, and if I could have, I would have taken him with me. But I couldn't offer enough room to roam, and he was already part of a family. They gave him bones and lots of other treats. Ah, Julius, I can still remember your beige bristly hair, your hot breath, and the feel of your sandpaper tongue, your excited cries. It was all so uncomplicated, Julius, and I like it like that. Julius. I miss you so. The layers of her flesh reminded me of a huge wedding cake, the kind with lots of tears. When I arrived for the visit on May the 4th, she was spread out on the bed. Her skin looked smooth, so smooth, like a white whale. And her feet were like twisted fins. Her knees were swollen to an improbable width, and those hands that I like to think of as porcelain wings had little black heel-like growths on them. She was in a morphine-induced stupor, but was nonetheless easily agitated. Mom shared a room in the nursing home with Lillian, a woman of 92 who hadn't left her bed in years for anything other than the very basic necessities. Lillian liked me because I lived in Manhattan. She loved Manhattan. Lillian had luminescent skin, but she wasn't a nice woman. When Mom moved into the nursing home, she needed a place to store her outfits, and there were at least 30 of them, largely mix and match polyester ones. But Lillian had two dresses and a robe in her closet. She wouldn't let Mom store them there. curtain between them and Mom's bed was by the window. She loved being near the window. On May 5th, 2005, in the afternoon, the doctor came in to check on Mom. He told me she could live in a current state for weeks, or maybe she'd pull through. She'd surprised everyone so many times before. I was still with her in the evening at around 7:15 when she finally seemed to be resting peacefully. I called my sister Randy and I said I would leave earlier than I had planned. Would she come to get me at 8:30? The usually kind attendant who had a thick Haitian patois went to change her at 7:30. I said, no, please. She hasn't slept this peacefully in days. But she said those were the order. 7:30 is the time to change her.
To change her.
I watched very closely as she turned my mother from side to side. My eyes scanned every inch of her body. Her white skin had so many bruises on it, but you could still see the light freckles in many places. Her pubic hair was curly and very sparse. Her pendulous breasts were still enormous. I'd seen her nude many times before, but it had been a long time since she could experience the luxury of vanity regarding her body. Still, she never left her room in a wheelchair without makeup and a matching ensemble. When the attendant was nearly finished changing her, Mom became agitated, her body so tense, she started making extremely contorted gestures. She was struggling to find her breath, and horrible creaking sounds were coming out of her. Please, please put on the oxygen mask. She can't breathe, I cried. Lillian could not see anything on Mom's side of the drawn curtain, but she called out, get a doctor! Why is there no doctor? I ran to get someone to help. It seemed like forever before the nurse came in and put on the mask, but it got worse and worse and worse. The gasping intensified. Her face was twisted into a position that I'd never seen before, not in real life. Why can't somebody help? What's happening? What's happening? The attendant stood there very calmly, very still, her hands clasped in front of her. You know. But I didn't know, not just then. I tried to hold my mother, to sing her favorite song, the one I never wanted to sing for her. The minute you walked in the door, I could tell you was a man of distinction, real big spender, good looking, so. My sister Randy arrived to pick me up punctually at 8:30. She's an emergency room nurse. She always carries her stethoscope. She put it on. She listened to our mother's heart. At 8:35, Randy pronounced her dead. I don't remember them taking her body away, and I don't remember when I saw the book on the cluttered nightstand beside her empty bed. It was covered in embossed faux leather, a paisley pattern. It was kind of beautiful, even though it was plastic. I opened it. I was surprised when I looked through the pages and saw that the book was a collection of rather hardcore Victorian pornography. And there were very amorous letters placed in the book, which had been written by a lover who she hadn't seen in many years. I took the letters and the book with me. I have them still.
And peace, and peace, and peace.
Your fear of my living was stronger than your love. You hammered me so hard, I swallowed my words. But oh, your skin, I always gave in. Your kisses all over me made me sing, but I could not speak. You needed me to say that I would always, always stay, but you could not hear me. Your volume was up so high. Please turn it down, I beg. I told you I was up in the air, so you went back online to the site where we first met. You denied it when I asked you. Use the name I had given you, Woody Allen Belmondo. You were smart, but rarely slow. And so quick to find another again. When you came clean, I said goodbye and cried. But you sent me 30 text messages saying, declare yourself to me and I am all yours. Even though you had already taken her to bed 3 days in a row. I took you back. But how could I trust someone whose new screen name was Secrets 07?
All of these pieces were, the time period was either the 70s, one little thing in the 90s, and then the 2000s.
Glider planes. I love flying in all kinds of planes and looking through the lacy leaf trees at the water below. Whoa. I was flying with my friend Kathy Ray on our holiday. She was reading Chinese poetry from an anthology. Soon after we arrived at her friend's house, she played piano while I danced. I'm so glad that nobody else was there to see me. We took a walk through a forest. She was wearing a t-shirt with clouds and she fell into some mud. So very lovely. Seeing clouds and sky and earth all together on her chest.
And when we got out of the forest, the sun had already set, and there were men filling the streets, and they were wearing high black hats, and they had long, long curls and long black coats, and then we came upon a sign that said, "Welcome to Bethlehem, Bethlehem, New Hampshire."
Wow.
Jason Wong, Marika Hughes, Nicole Federici, Jessica Pagone, Danny Tunick, Dave Hofstra, Daphne Naftali. And if you come back Saturday, there's going to be a program with our amazing bios in it. I can't believe it.
They're amazing and,
you know. You know how you steer your body, your gaze, to find the view that's so sublime. It presses the nerve that sets off your tears. In Italian, ricordo means I remember. The body's a camera recording the light. Remember how we mind the light that first day? You wanted to take me to the countryside. We were driving when suddenly you pulled the car off the road. Took my hand and led me to a clearing in the woods, to a lake filled with lily pads. And in that deep velvet voice you said, "Schau das Licht an." Look at the light. I suddenly watched you swim naked. You beckoned me in. I remember how you sipped the glittering droplets of water off of my shoulders. Standing on a soft bed of fallen needles, we appeared as a pair of silhouettes on the trunk of a huge spruce tree. One silhouette above the other, undulating slowly, we were guiding the light. Rows of evergreens, will you go and sit there until the long diagonal sphere of sun pierces through the trees and pierces your garden body? Yes, so don't move, hold the light. You grow again like a big stalked sunflower, and you smile that grin, turning tonight your head between my legs. I sigh, watching storm clouds in the distance. You said if you could watch clouds on TV, you'd never turn it off. We brush against fuzzy pillows and shapes of metallic, like flash, like lightning. Our only life in the cave like room. We conducting the love. Just get in and paddle, you said. You take the yellow boat and I'll take the red. Paddling towards the sun, long strong strokes, slowly bathing, as easy as floating. Star-shaped shards of light jump up like big fins through the surface of the water. Twinkling light. Mesmerized, I had noticed the lines thrown in by six people with poles up on the pier above. Not until the sun illuminated them, I had to lift each glistening thread over my head with my left hand to make way for the kayak. I paddled through with right. Remember the light. Io ricordo la luce. Ricordo, yeah, mining the light.
Now one tiny little piece from the CD and that's it.
Simo!
Marika.
Carousels. I was talking with the people she'd been talking about. Everybody wanted to catch the ring. They were moving slowly, trying to find it as she spun around. Then bolted, jumped over the horses, marking time. She turned on a dime. That day she was agitated.
Yet they kept looking for traces and places gone out of nowhere. The Heisenberg principle. The horse appeared in the backyard. She wanted to ride it, but saw it flee into the night. Relieved. She turned again on a dime. A line was dropped. She picked it up, flew away. Caught the moon, made of wood. Caught it out. The one, the one, the two, the two, the blue, the blue one, the blue two, like her eyes. Yes, yesterday's child. Yes, yesterday's child. See the stars, look at them. Disappear, flick, switch, look again. Imagine, 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 imagine. Imagine more people on the carousel circling in your mind. Yesterday's beginning never happened at all. Giselle, my friend. Giselle, my friend. Giselle, my friend. Giselle, my friend. Giselle took my hand, sat me down, kissed my cheeks, grabbed the ring, put it on the ring.
Imagine, 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 imagine.